inconscient. Ils n'ont changé. Hell, it may talk with you.
Fred, hello, and can I just say fabulous gesticulations to the intro to our podcast?
I was dancing in my chair.
Yes, no, it was extraordinary. Hi, my name is...
And I'm Fred, and right. I was going to say that there's very reason for me to be so cheerful dancing in my chair, because A, the text people are on my back still. B, my iPhone broke down. C, I went to a record fair today and there were like literally four stalls. So I drove 50 Ks to go through four crates of records. So
and did we you are find not in anything?
A good mood. Yeah, I did find a few things, I must say.
Okay.
Oh, Alice Coltrane.
Right.
Small Faces. You know that round Small Faces one?
Yeah.
That was in a round sleeve. Yeah. And so that was worth it, I think, in the end. But, you know, you
don't
get
free. It has a very funny song on it. I can't remember, though, about oatmeal or something. Is that
right? Well, the title is something with oatmeal, I think. Oat nuts, corn flakes. Yeah.
Yeah, nut corn flakes.
Anyway, so, yeah, that's the one.
Okay, and so is that what you've been listening to this for this morning, at least? Is this what's obsessing you?
No, I haven't. You know, it goes through a process. I do cleaning. So first I wash them in alcohol solution. Then I wash them in a water solution. Then they dry.
Right.
Then they get a new sleeve. Then they find their way to my to-be-played pile, which is enormous. So, I mean, I haven't played records that I bought a year ago. So there you go.
Okay. All right. So what have you been listening to?
Well, there's this, I don't know, you know, I'm not big on hip hop. I like it a bit. When early on, you know, when all these Public Enemy and LL Cool J and Run DMC and the Beastie Boys. But I lost interest when the whole gangster rap thing came about. But then I regained interest when I was working for a Dutch national newspaper. And we were going to do a book about rap in Europe. It was called Respect, with an exclamation mark, because that's what all these guys want. You know, they want respect.
Right.
And we did, me and the colleague, we did a couple of cities. If I remember well, there was Berlin, Paris, London, Amsterdam, Madrid. I think that was it. And then in each city, we interviewed some famous or less famous rappers. And what struck me then, that we mainly focused on immigrants, is how great rap is for people of any nationality, any language, to adapt the format to your kind of thing. So if you're from Senegal, you can rap in Wolof, use beats, add some traditional instruments, whatever you want, and make it yours. And if you're from Turkey, like we did in Berlin, you add Turkish lyrics. So these guys I've been listening to are called Kneecap, and they're from Northern Ireland. As you know, Kneecap is the sort of punishment they meted out to, I think, drug dealers in the days
of
the
troubles. No, wasn't it? It was people who didn't toe the line of the IRA or the...
Also drug dealers.
Oh, really? Drug dealers too? Okay.
Yeah.
That's nice.
They sort of ruined things, I think. And, you know, they needed some sort of sense of normality within their community. So drug dealers were a disturbance and they got punished with the kneecap shot. And so these three guys are quite young and they named themselves Kneecap, which is in itself quite a controversial name. And I'm not going to tell you the whole story, but they rap both in English and in Gaelic. And which, of course, I can't understand the word because I don't speak it. But it sounds magnificent. And they're very political. they got a tune called Brits Out. I think it's called Brits Out. They sing about drugs. They sing about MDMA, which in their language, then they translate and use the first four or five letters, which is then called four-letter word, which refers to MD. You know, it's all very clever. And they're very controversial. They've been banned from radios. They played a number of concerts for the people in Palestine. So they're a new breed, and I quite like them. I mean, let's listen to them.
Okay.
Enjoy grabbing underneath all the chatter in this heaven. Got a little peek one day, made me feel a go of seven. I know it exists, but I can't stop getting pissed. One more thing, I'll be added to the list. We are into jury, tackle my rug, Marvy Lamb, white Uggams and noob. We hiss La Fox, so I stroll and draw and false a wallet. Four digit core, what do you know? It's Makara. I'm gonna be spending my dough tonight. Two tanks at a time, strolling about like Dolomite. But home for a shake, dirt deuce, a chair, a mark, one push, my narrow barker.
Yeah, you know, I mean, it is infectious. It is absolutely extraordinarily infectious. I mean, that's the thing about rap. I think the thing about rap is that, you know, it enabled a whole new generation of young men to go and stand up on a stage and do stuff. You know, you didn't have to do anything difficult and embarrassing like sing, you know, and attract women and, you know, be someone and say your thing, you know, so very attractive for young guys. And it is now the most preferred music medium in America. So, you know, it's
all over the world, popular. I think.
Yeah.
And also you don't need much, you know, all you need is basically a beat. And your words, you don't need a whole big, like if you're in a band, you need equipment, you have to deal with instruments. You don't need to play an instrument. You can cut and paste. I mean, it's a whole different technique, and which makes it very low threshold for anyone who wants to start something in music. It's a bit like punk rock in that way. You know, it's very groundbreaking and opens all sorts of avenues for people who would otherwise not made any music.
Yeah, no, exactly. And that's obviously holding, you know, there have been musical genres that have been, you know, have been flashes in the pan.
Come and go.
So now I think we can accept now that rap is going to be with us forever.
It's been over 50 years now.
Yeah, exactly. So I sort of happened on a song last year, which was by this group called the Felice Brothers, and it was called Jazz on the Autobahn. And it was, you know, a kind of nightmarish tableau, you know, it was, but clever and smart and, you know, a sort of take on the end of the world, you know, very dark. Anyway, it was just completely absorbing. So I thought, wow, this is like a interesting new group. I wonder how many records they've put out. Turns out 19. The lead singer is going gray. You know, they've been going around the States for ages and ages. They sort of American Gothic, I suppose you could call them. There's this one description that I read, which was they are imaginative, heady, menacing, passionate, and rollicking. Anyway, so this is not this song that that really kind of attracted me to them, but I think this is just a very good song. It's just, you know, it's just this pure songwriting skill is extraordinary, and it's amazing that this band that has been going, you know, for so long is only sort of like bursting into public sort of knowledge now, or maybe they have, I don't know, but they certainly haven't been on my radar. Take a listen.
Who's that riding on the banks of the Rio Grande? It's Jean-Claude Van Damme. It's Jean-Claude Van Damme. Who's that riding on the banks of the Rio Grande?
Anyway, kind of folky.
That's
as
a
you
lovely
can
song.
Tell. Yeah, it's a great song.
You know, funny story, when I was doing my research for my book, Blues for the White Man, I was in Atlanta.
Slight flex there, I noticed.
And there was a guy there who helped me around, and he was a journalist and writer himself. And he said, okay. I'm going to the Felici Brothers tonight. Do you want to join? And I stupidly said, no,
you
I
didn't.
Don't know them. <I don't, laughs> How bad is that? Well, you know, it's Atlanta. You have to drive enormous distances in a city that you don't know, and you're tired. Yeah. And I thought, a band that I don't know, and you have to sit through 2 hours of music, that you may not like. So I didn't.
All right. Well, let's get into our topic for this week, which is about how to recover from a robbery or a sort of theft incident. Maybe you should tell people why this comes to mind. This was your idea.
Yeah, it was my idea. You know, I have a friend, Tracy, and she sometimes helps me do research for stories that I'm doing. So we meet every now and then, every month or something, for coffee and croissants. So I met her last week and I said, how are you doing? She said, I'm fine. Well, actually, I'm not fine. And then she told me about a burglary that they had. You know, they have all the protection except electrical fence, but they have an alarm system. They have a wall with spikes and whatever. And she said, and the guy entered at 5:45 in the morning when the whole family was already up, because she goes out for runs early in the morning. And somehow he managed to go on the roof and then climb down the drain pipe, I guess, into the sitting room where they had just gone to the kitchen to make coffee or tea. And he snatched a laptop that belonged to the daughter, the 12-year-old daughter, brand new laptop. And then he disappeared. And I mean, it's not a lot, and you get it back from your insurance, etc. But, you know, of course, the biggest blow is that your privacy has been damaged and you don't feel safe in your own house anymore. You start wondering how this guy came in, how he knew about the system, because apparently there was one door that he must have known that was not locked, etc. You know, and I've gone through the same ordeal most people in South Africa have. You got a burglary in your house and it leaves you really emotionally quite empty. And it's not so much the material stuff, it's the psychological scars that it leaves behind. And for her as well. And, you know, she's got two young children, 12 and 14 or something. And you fear for their safety. And you think, well, you know, the first time they come to check, and then the next time they'll come back to take what they didn't get the first time. And then I was making music with a friend of mine. He said, sorry, I have to cancel because a guy just stole my iPhone, 23,000 rand iPhone, brand new, by jumping from the road up to his balcony. And he had gone inside, a bit like her, inside to do something, make coffee or something. And he grabbed it from the table and he ran away, went to the neighbors, grabbed another cell phone, ran away again. And so there were two of those things in within 4 days. And well, you, I don't know if you've ever been burgled, but.
Oh, yeah. It's on Ontario.
No.
You're right about the kind of vulnerability of it all. Because, you know, the strangest feeling is that there's a kind of weird sense of relief because they could have got more. It could have ended really badly. You know, people that you know who were involved in robberies, it ended very badly for everybody, you know, including for the robber. And in South Africa, there's so much poverty. You sort of slightly wonder whether if things were different, you know, would you also, you know, just grab a few cell phones, you know? I mean,
you do a bit of ninja
to be too judgmental. Sorry, say again.
No, I said do a bit of ninja acrobatics, Spider-Man. But the thing is, it's your own personal safety, and you lie awake the next couple of nights, and everything you hear, the dog bark or whatever, you think they're back. And it leaves a huge scar. I think people who do the robberies don't realize. I mean, I don't think they think about that very much, but I don't think people realize how big the scars they leave are. And, you know, I'd rather give the stuff away than having to lay awake at night every night and your heart beating and you hear something and you make scenarios in your head like, how am I going to deal with it? And you never deal with the way that you imagined you did. You know, it's the fight or flight, people say. Well, I had that burglary and I heard stuff. And instead of hiding in my room, it was like 4 a.m. or something, normal burglary time. And I screamed and stormed out of the bedroom, which I think wasn't a great idea, but then they disappeared. But, you know, by the same token, they beat you up and tie you to a chair and do whatever they want with you.
Yeah.
Anyway, we got a few songs about this.
I know. I mean, it was interesting thinking about songs that have to do with robbery and theft and police and, you know, and it's not a subject in itself where there's a lot of, you know, people writing about them, about robbery. It's not a sort of go-to subject, which in some ways makes it more interesting, sort of thinking about the songs that are associated with robbery. But anyway, let's listen to your first song. Well, we all know that. So, Jack White's most famous song. Yeah,
it became a big sports song. I mean, every basketball or whatever stadium they play that. Down, boom, 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 boom. Anyway, I asked my friend Tracy, and I said, "So, which song would you like to be played?" And she gave me three songs, and this was the one that the family chose: her children and her husband. And so I thought, as a tribute to Tracy, we play this one. I just want to quote old Jack, because I mean, it's a bit of a revenge song. I think that's, and it's about surviving bad days. And he said, Seven Nation Army started out about two specific people I knew in Detroit. It was about gossip, spreading of lies and other person's reaction to it. It came from a frustration of watching my friends do this to each other. It started to become a metaphor for things I was going through, but I never set out to write an expose on myself. To me, the song was a blues at the beginning of the 21st century. The third verse, I'm going to Wichita, far from this opera forevermore, could be something from 100 years ago. It won a Grammy for Best Rock Song. Maybe it should have won for Best Paranoid Blues Song. So that's what he said about it.
Yes, yes. He's such a fantastic musician. I mean, so kind of sort of weird and way out. And he has been responsible a little bit, I think, for a blues revival.
Yeah, certainly.
He just loves it so much. Yeah.
He said this song, he wanted to write a James Bond theme song. And you can hear that. You know, that riff.
Yeah, you can.
Could have been in a Bond movie.
Yeah.
Thank you, Trace.
Okay. So my song's actually in a similar vein. You'll tell what it is instantly. Police and thieves in the street, fighting the nation with their guns and ammunition. Police and thieves in the street. Well, that was Jeannie and Mervyn with Police and Thieves. I mean, I just thought that it was you don't think about crime all the time. You know, it's just, it sort of intrudes in your life. It sort of like comes at you. But when it does,
but it's always
you
there.
Know, you can't think of anything else. So this is a kind of reflection of that. That's just on your mind, Police and Thieves all the time. This song, it was a bit of a one-hit wonder for Jeannie Mervyn. It's a classic reggae. I saw it had Sly Dunbar on the drums, and it was recorded at the famous reggae studio, Black Ox Studio in Kingston, Jamaica. Anyway, a very good song. Most people's introduction to it, I would guess, was through the Clash version. But actually, I really like this kind of softer, more lilting falsetto version that was the original. Anyway.
I got introduced to it through The Clash. I never heard of Junior Mervyn, nor Lee Perry, nor the Arc Studios. And The Clash, as you say, it was a long song on their first album, like 5 minutes plus, which was very punk. And theirs was very angry, wasn't it?
Yes. But, you know, it was an odd choice for them because the original was really a kind of anti the thief sort of song, you know, but also anti the police. You know, the Clash were more like when they knock on your front door, how are you going to come with your hands on your trigger of your gun? You know, that sort of very clashiness.
Yeah, they were more militant.
Yes. But the original was you know, equally judgmental about all sides of this picture.
The Clash one is, to me, sounded very anti-police,
yes,
more than anti-thieves. And the thieves might have been other kind of thieves in their minds. You know, the thieves that are in the big corporations, in government, those thieves.
Yes. Exactly. All right. So this you're going to have to explain to us.
Did you notice?
Not at all. No, of course not. So, I mean, I do think that the title is very apposite. Everything is fucked.
Everything's fucked, yeah. And it's by the Dirty Three, an Australian band that features Warren Ellis, who went on to become Nick Cave's main sparring partner, I would say. After Blixa Bargeld left the bed seats, he needed a new guy to come up with great ideas. And it was an old friend of his. You know, they're both from Australia, of course. And they knew each other. And I think Warren had played on some of his albums already. So I think that was the end of the Dirty Three as well. But the Dirty Three, I saw them live once. I think they were supporting PJ Harvey. And they're an instrumental band. It's guitar, drums and violin, and it was quite amazing, you know, because I like vocalists. I'm not so into instrumental music, but you didn't miss it, because that Warren Ellis, he was every song, sort of this one as well, builds up to an absolute climax, and he's like the Jimi Hendrix on the electric violin. He goes totally berserk, stands on speakers, he's got long bushy hair and a beard, and you know, it's a huge spectacle. And this is from their first album, which came out in 1995. And I always liked the title, you know, because it's sort of like in this case with the robbery and a couple of other things that don't go well. It's that moment where you say, you know what, everything's fucked. And you sort of give in and think, there's nothing I can do. The world is fucked. This is a fucked up place and everything's fucked. So I can imagine after the anger, when you're being burgled or mugged or whatever, you get that other feeling. You know, first there's all the adrenaline. And then when the adrenaline subsides, you're left with this sort of empty feeling that leaves you, I guess, in a kind of depression, probably. A lot of people need anti-anxiety drugs and stuff after a burglary. And it is, you know, it's everything's fucked. That's the feeling you have. Sums it up.
Yes.
Did you enjoy it?
I mean, I did a lot. I think it was fabulous. We've only played, of course, a tiny little snippet, but the whole song, as you say, very absorbing. I can sort of imagine you sitting in your, you know, sitting on the floor, looking around at everything that's been stolen from your prized possessions, and you know, just being sort of angry and sad, you know, at the same time, and kind of slowly recovering. So no, it's great stuff.
Well, there's also that. But we had a burglary. We had a little house in a place called Vrede. And there we assembled all sorts of things that we found in secondhand shops, nice little things that meant a lot to us. And about two or 3 months in, everything that we had brought in there was stolen. You know, it wasn't worth a penny, but it was stuff that meant so much to us. And that's a moment where you know, you come to a new town and you think, wow, this is great, nice people. And within 2 months, psht, gone. That's when you say that, when you want to play that song, I can tell you.
Yes. I remember a long time ago, you remember Yeovil was a kind of haunt lots of bars and bands and craziness in the street, and it's in the middle of Yeovil. And then it sort of gradually got darker and darker and darker. And I used to know a musician who lived there, and he really didn't have very much. They broke into his flat and they took everything other than the welcome mat and the yellow pages. And then he said, you know, the next day they came back for the yellow pages. I always thought that would be a great song. And jeepers, I better look after the damn yellow pages, because this is all I've got left.
Yes. And welcome, Matt.
Yeah.
What's your second choice?
My second choice is, this is slightly unusual. I don't know, you'll have to tell me whether this is appropriate or not. But, I mean, the title is appropriate. It's called Favorite Crime.
I watched as you fled the scene, the light as you buried me. One heart broke, four hands bloody. The things I did, just so I could call you mine. The things you did, well, I hope I was your favorite crime.
All right. Well, if you are, say, at high school and happen to be of the, you know, female persuasion, you'll know who that is. That's Olivia Rodrigo. It's not my sort of favorite style of music. She's very pop. She writes about, you know, relationships. And this is a kind of relationship, you know, using crime as an analogy, you know, but I just think she's fantastic. I mean, I, a long time ago, a guy who worked for a record company told me that any record company in the world will be making a huge, huge, huge mistake if it ignores, you know, young woman singers singing about relationships. It's just a genre unto itself, and it's fantastically popular. But you know what's remarkable? Olivia Rodrigo, she's brought out two albums. They've both gone to the top of the charts. You know, that hasn't happened for a long time. You know, you have to go, I think, back to Beyonce for that. And her songwriting ability is just fantastic. It's just very smart and sophisticated. She's very funny. She's kind of quite wild. She sort of captures the moment with extraordinary ease. And I just love her. I mean, she's obviously going to be a huge force for years and years and years, because she's the entire package. You know, she is a great songwriter. She's got a beautiful voice. She sings well with spunk. You know, and she's very pretty. You know, she's a sort of, a lot of people say she's a kind of younger version of Taylor Swift. Maybe that's true.
I heard it, I thought could be Taylor.
Yeah.
That song.
Yes. No, exactly. Yeah.
No, I know. And they had a few issues as well, didn't they? I mean, they were friends, and then something happened, and they weren't friends anymore. And
I mean, she sees her
a bit as a threat.
There's a bit of competition, as you would if you were writing songs into the same sort of slightly the same market.
Those lyrics could have been Taylor Swift.
Exactly. She's got a little bit more of a sort of cheeky minx about her than she's and you know, for all of the kind of young woman singers, I think she really stands out. I think Taylor Swift will have to look to her laurels, you know, in order to make sure that this young upstart doesn't come and start grabbing the mic. The link with the theme of our podcast, the idea of a crime and a relationship being linked, is you know, it's quite a subtle thought. It's quite an interesting idea, because you imagine the stealing something, and imagine it from the thief's point of view, right? I mean, wouldn't they also be thinking, who is this guy? Why does he have a picture of the Felice brothers on his phone? You know, you are involved in a very weird relationship with the
perpetrator. I think if they steal your phone, they're not going to wonder what the photo of the Felice brothers is and why it's there.
Maybe not.
They'll sell it for $300 and it will be sold on for 2,000. You know, it's like that. But I get what you're saying. I also thought so when they stole my laptop, and I thought, I wonder what they think about my music on the laptop.
yes. At least they should, you know, give back the laptop when they see what incredible taste I have.
Exactly.
All right, let's move on. Here's your third song. Well, you know, if I can completely see that if you've just had a burglary, shoving that on, all of the anger and the rebound, you know, is, you know, pent up vitriol.
It doesn't need much explanation, does it? No. It's the phase that comes after the everything's fucked, where you get up again and you think, fuck them, actually. And, you know, the choice was between two songs. I mean, this was Black Flag, Rise Above, from 1980, I think. They were one of the first hardcore American punk bands, and they set a whole new genre, which was labeled hardcore. And it's got Henry Rollins on vocals. It's the opening track, and I always thought, Jesus, if this is your opening track, what's the rest of the album going to sound like? And the rest is equally good, but it's like, you know, it's brutal. It's brutal.
Yes,
the other song that I thought of, but it's impossible to play, because I know your next song is of a band that's sort of from a certain ilk. And they released a few tracks on, I think it was Little Indian Records, which was run by a guy of a band called Flux of the Pink Indians. And they were narco-punks. In the late 70s, they were related to Kress and that whole anarchist, feminist, pacifist, whatever scene. And they, at some stage, I think it was the last album, brought an album out, which was 45 minutes of just noise and shouting. It's like, it's one track, and it just goes on and on and on. You turn the record around, it goes on. And it was called The Fucking Cunts Treat Us Like Pricks. And I always thought that's one of the best titles I've ever heard in my life. Because you often get that feeling, you know, where you go somewhere, you push from one side to the other, and you're just as if you don't exist. And I thought, you know, because here, if you go to the police, they sort of say, oh, yeah. And you're treated like a prick, basically, by the fucking cunts. So, and I thought, what a great title that is. It's bound to not sell a lot of copies, but you know, it's good.
No. I like
anyway.
It.
I really so Rise
like
Above.
Song. I thought this Rise Above was a better choice in a way, because it sort of taps into your emotional mental state after a robbery and pulls you forward. You know, so I like
that. And it sounds genuinely angry.
Yeah.
You know, there's not somebody pretending to be angry. It's like, this guy, you don't want to meet him in the street tonight.
All righty. Well, that's a good intro, in fact, to this next song. Take a listen. It's also a bounce back song that was Tub Thump Inc. by Chumbawamba. They're sort of one hit, I guess. And the link with Black Flag is that they were also punk anarchists. And you couldn't tell that, by the way, from that song. They're also very controversial, but completely contradictory. You know, they famously had a compilation LP called Fuck EMI. And then, you know, a couple of years later, they signed with EMI.
They are one of those bands that came out of that Kress that I was talking about scene. And their first song ever released, Kress released a couple of albums called The Bullshit Detector. And it was tapes that had been sent to them by starting bands, you know, like very, very amateurish. And they didn't change anything about it. They just put the songs on as they got them. And one of the first albums had a Chumbawamba song. And that was their first ever release. And they were part of that whole anarchist, vegetarian, very left-wing scene. But they were more clever, I think. They didn't go sort of totally anti-commercial. I mean, like Flux of the Pink Indians with that album title we just talked about. They went commercial because they thought, you got to bring the kids in. You mustn't exclude them. And they had a top 10 hit with this song.
Yes, no, that's right. I mean, they had a nice sense of humor. And they you probably know this, but they had a song which was a list of passengers for a doomed flight. And it was a song about all the people that they would like to see on an airplane that crashed. And, you know, and it included Tony Blair and Ally McBeal and Bono.
Poor Bono, so, always him.
Yeah, I know, why? I remember going to parties when this song was put on. And it really was, the kind of song that bounced everybody out of the chairs and really sort of enthused people. And just the whole idea of getting knocked down and getting up again. And
the problem is with this band that people don't listen to the message anymore. They just have a drink and jump around. And, you know, the whole idea that they were trying to expound is lost. Because you become a student drinking song or something.
But I guess
they hope that people will start digging a bit deeper. And so who is this band and what do they stand for? One of the funny anecdotes about them is that Jason Donovan, do you remember him? He was a pop singer.
Yes, vaguely.
And then he was gay, I think. And he denied or he didn't like the idea that he was seen as gay. So he denied in The Face magazine. And then Chumbawamba came with a T-shirt that said, Jason Donovan, queer as fuck. was quite funny.
To their credit, they became such a headache for EMI that they were eventually dropped. And they sort of left the music scene very kind of happy to depart. They said, it was great. We traveled the world. We released some records. We appeared on TV programs. We made some money, which, by the way, they claim they plowed into worthwhile causes. But anyway.
And talking about crime, their singer, the female singer, I forgot her name, encouraged people to do shoplifting. So they were on the other side there.
Yeah, no. And more than that, one of their members in an interview said, you know, nothing can change the fact that we really like it when cops get killed.
It's not funny.
No, it's not funny at all. No. Actually, when you've had a robbery, the one thing that you really want is you want the cops to be alive and around and working.
Yeah, which is sometimes a problem. Yeah, anyway, yeah. It's a good choice. I like it.
Okay.
Because now we get to the hard part, the hardest part.
Yeah, now we get to the hard part.
Let's throw out first.
Yes. I would throw out the Olivia Rodrigo song because it's not really about robbery and crime. It's more about relationships, to be honest.
And I would throw out the White Stripes because it wasn't our choice.
Okay. I mean, of all of the songs, I actually really like the Junior Mervyn song. It's got a nice history. And of your songs, I like the Black Flag song the most. I think it's...
I like the Chumbawamba song as well, I must say.
Okay.
That's a hard one now, eh?
Yeah. Well, let's throw out the Junior Mervyn because we're both gravitating towards songs that are bounce back songs.
Yeah,
so the question is, which of the bounce back songs is the most worthy?
Personally, I would go for Black Flag because I think in this country you sometimes get so furious, like out of your mind furious and not joyfully furious that the Chumbawamba, which is quite a cheerful furiousness. So that's why I would go for Black Flag.
Okay. I'm with you, actually. I think the Chumbawamba song, it's a little bit sort of happy and poppy for after you've suffered from a robbery. And so, okay, so let's agree. Black Flag is the appropriate song to listen to after you've had a burglary or a robbery. The perfect song. It sounds so contradictory just to say that. Anyway. So, well, thanks, Tim. Fred. Yeah. And next week, I thought, we went to a restaurant this last weekend. And I know, shocking. And the owner of the restaurant put on a Dire Straits song, a very old one. And it just reminded me that when we were talking about topics, one of our topics was the song that you would play if you were a restaurant owner to make sure that all of the guests who you don't want to stay anymore finally leave.
Closing time.
Yeah. Exactly. So what do you play if you're a restaurant owner and you want people out? Or a bartender?
Did Dire Straits do that to you?
I like Dire Straits. I mean, it reminds me of being a school kid and stuff, and the skill is high, I mean, the guitar work is admirable. But I mean, I can imagine every single note now after listening to it for 30 years. I mean, it's sort of, I kind of anticipate the word by word, guitar lick by guitar lick.
No, I think that's a good choice. A restaurant, not a nightclub, right?
Yeah, not a nightclub, a restaurant. Or, could do a nightclub if you wanted. The worst disco song that you could think of, and everybody thinks, oh my God, let's go home.
Well, a place where you can eat or drink, and you want to go home, and there's still people there, and you think, right, when will they ever leave? So you turn on
yes.
and make sure that they leave. We can play Black Flag again, though.
I know. This is true. All right. Thanks very much, Fred. Great chat as always.
That was good. Thank you.
Let's play
see
out
you next
week. With the Black Flag.
Rise above, we're gonna rise above. When they can't do it themselves, rise above, we're gonna rise above.